Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barber, and with me is Shannon Connors. She finished first place in our latest transformation contest, and we're just going to get going. So if you're listening on iTunes, go over to venusindex.com and check out her pictures. You did a great job. Your after pictures are great, and let's just get going. So I've got a rough idea of where I want to go with this, but like we just talked about, you got your own ideas of what you want to get across. So throw stuff. If I'm not leading you down the right path and you want to say something, just fire it out. So I guess to start with, and you were already sharing some of this with me, let's get into your history, your diet training history before Venus, and then how you got to Venus.
Sure. Well, this is really surreal because I've listened to all the podcasts so many times, especially during the contest, and so I'm very excited to have my own finally after all this time. I could go way back to, you know, junior high and all that, and maybe you get into that later, but maybe I'll just talk about my more recent kind of experience with diet and exercise. But kind of all started in mid-2009. I had a trip to Disney World with my family. I have a daughter and my husband, and at the time she was about 5. And after we got home, I hated every single picture of myself. I was looking at myself and saying, what happened to me? I'd gotten back into shape after I had her. You know, to pretty reasonable shape, or at least I was happy with my body, and then I got a new job, and everything started to go really downhill.
And this is 2009?
Yeah.
And how old are you?
I'm 36 this year.
You're 36. Okay, so, all right. I'm just trying to frame it for people.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So I decided it was time to get back in shape, and so what did I start doing? Rollerblading. You know, and actually I came around to going back to weight training kind of slowly and through a different program. Actually, this was before Venus, so I started doing some of the turbulence training workouts and listening to the podcast, and one of the things I kept saying is you can't out-train a bad diet. So after this trip to Disney World and eating all the buffets and stuffing my face, you know, I came home and I started really kind of trying to internalize that message and clean up my diet. And I'd lost probably about 10 pounds by the end of the year. And then I started, I did one of the transformation contests, turbulence training. And that's where I met Naomi, actually. And she's been a great support to me throughout this whole kind of process. And we were doing turbulence training together. I did a couple of those contests. And I got to a point where I was pretty happy around January of 2010. So that was right around the time that the first contest was starting up for Venus and the first program came out, and Naomi was all excited about it. And we had this whole Facebook conversation about, oh, this ideal measurements program's coming out. She'd been waiting for this for a really long time. And I was like, it's really not the right time for me to do this. You know, we're thinking about having another baby, and I've sort of been doing this last transformation contest just sort of while I'm waiting to, you know, see if we get pregnant. And it's like, oh, I'm just going to have to wait. She's like, okay. And then, you know, when the first contest for Venus ended, I was pregnant. And seeing the results, I was just like, okay, I can't do the contest, but I bought the program, and I started doing the workouts at 17 weeks pregnant. Mm. So I was actually doing the VI, the first phase workouts, while I was pregnant for, you know, 17 weeks until sometime in my third trimester, and I kind of switched to some shorter workouts.
How was that anyways? Manageable?
Yeah, it was. And I actually, you know, when I was tired, I would do fewer sets.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I started out doing kind of shorter workouts in my first trimester when I wasn't really feeling very well. But I felt great. My second trimester was awesome. So I continued working out through the whole pregnancy. You know, I did Venus until about my third trimester. Then I sort of started to slow down again and do sort of shorter workouts. But I kept lifting. In fact, I did my last weight workout. It was the Saturday before my son was born on a Tuesday. So, I read a lot on it. You know, I looked at the experiences of a lot of other women that had been lifting during their pregnancies, and I said, you know what, I'm going to do this because, you know, my first pregnancy, I think I started out at about 150 pounds. I gained like 60 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, after the birth, I couldn't even recognize myself when I look at those pictures. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And it took a long time to get it off. And I said, I'm
what
not
is it, like,
do
does
that
that,
again.
Is that like, I'm so naive to this. Is that like pain, discomforting? Like is.
Uh-huh. My husband was giving me foot rubs like every single night. You know, I was uncomfortable. But yet, I think I just used that pregnancy as an excuse to completely eat whatever I wanted all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm talking like a full serving of rattlesnake pasta at Pizzeria Uno, you know, once a week. I mean, it was ridiculous, but, you know, it was just sort of, I don't know, crazy pregnancy hormones or just a license to eat whatever. But anyway, so that was my first pregnancy, and I ended up at the end with, you know, higher blood pressure, you know, with various issues. Obviously, my weight was a huge issue, and I did manage to get back in shape after that, but I didn't want this second pregnancy to be like that. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be, you know, healthy as possible. You know, I wasn't super obsessive about what I was eating, but I did eat more than I usually do, but I managed to keep the weight gain to like 45 pounds. So it was a lot different swing for me going from my first birth with like, you know, 150 to 210, whereas this time it was more like 140 to 185 or so. It just felt a lot different. You know, I didn't really buy a lot of maternity clothes even. You know, I just wore a lot of like stretchy dresses and I lifted weights. I felt fit. You know, I still walked. Everyone was like, oh, you're a beautiful pregnant woman, which is nice to hear when you feel like a whale. But...
I apologize. I just find it so humorous when women use the word whale. It's just, guys never say that, but it's such a girl thing to say.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you feel like that after a while. Yeah. You're just like, when is it? Is it okay? We're getting there. It's almost my due date, like any day now. So I was glad my son actually came 2 weeks early. Mm. So that was kind of nice because, you know,
the bottom line is you got through this one with like less gaining.
Yes, less gaining and more fitness, and that really helped me out a lot because, you know, I was already still pretty fit when I had, you know, basically an enforced break of, you know, 6 weeks or so after he was born. So, you know, that was the longest period, I think, since mid-2009 that I'd actually taken off of lifting weights.
So also, doing it both ways, I guess we're on a little bit of a tangent here, but I think this is important. Doing it both ways, I mean, again, I know you're not a physician and this isn't medical advice. I'll disclaim that right now. But in your experience, it's better to you had a better go of it, training and kind of being more aware of your diet and your sort of fitness and the comfort level. The whole experience is better if you're going to do it that way, the experience of being pregnant.
Much, much, much better. So my first pregnancy was, you know, painful feet. I actually, my kids were due in the same month. So I've been through basically the same time of year pregnancy. So starting in January and ending like, you know, in September, end of September, early October. So my first pregnancy, you know, I exercised until May and then I just basically stopped. And I walked a little bit, but I stopped lifting weights. I found my old notebooks. I actually did lift weights until May. I was surprised. I didn't think I did anything during that pregnancy, but I did some. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up at the end, like I said, with higher blood pressure. My feet were hurting all the time. You know, I was making my husband give me feet rubs every single night. You know, nothing fit. I had all this awful, horrible, big, huge maternity clothing. You know, versus this time when I did manage to exercise, I felt really pretty good until the end. You know, I didn't have the kind of swelling that I had. I had, you know, no hypertension issues at all, which is amazing. No problems with blood sugar or anything like that. And my weight was good. So in my experience, the second pregnancy was a lot better, a lot healthier for me. I felt better. I felt better about myself. And in general, my health was just a lot better.
Okay, so I'm going to try to phrase this the least. I'm going to really try to tiptoe around this to not offend anybody who's been pregnant. So I'm not going to just speak about – this is just me to you, and then everyone can listen and take it how they want. Would you say that your weight gain the first time was unnecessary? Not that pregnancy just does that to you, but you kind of had a hand in eating more than you needed to – and then the second time around, you took it upon yourself to not let that happen. That's as far as I even want to say. You know?
Yes. That's absolutely right. You know, the first time I just kind of let myself do whatever I wanted, eat whatever I wanted, and I didn't really have a plan going in. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think, I could gain 60 pounds and feel really horrible at the end. You know, I just thought, well, I'm pregnant, and now it's my license to kind of do what I want for a while. And, you know, I kind of learned the lesson along the line several times in my life that, you know, I'm the kind of person that given given that I don't think about it, I'm gonna gain weight. And that definitely happened during that pregnancy. It happened during the second one too, but I didn't really give myself license to just do whatever I wanted and eat whatever I wanted and stop exercising. I said I have a goal at the end, and that is to at least get back to as good as I was before pregnancy. I'd like to be better. You know, I was on my way, hopefully, to better before the pregnancy, and I don't want this to kind of derail my whole fitness goals. I want it to sort of be an interlude, and then I'll get back to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I had more of a plan this time. I think that really helped. And there are a lot of women out there, and I think, you know, Facebook helps and the internet too. Just being able to follow women trainers and women athletes that are pregnant and see that, yeah, they can get it back and I can do it too. Mm-hmm. That really helped me out a lot, just as far as planning and preparing and how I thought and visualized about my post-pregnancy time.
Okay. That answers my question. All right. So where do we, so you get to VI. Okay. So how did you get to the point where you're finally ready to enter the contest?
So, you know, I got through my 6 weeks of enforced don't do anything, which I was really, really good. It was very hard for me. I started walking again, though, and that helped a little bit, you know, as I was finally recovering, started walking a little bit with the baby. And then at my 6 week checkup, they said, okay, you're fine to go back and, you know, work out. And the midwives that I worked with were actually really cool when I told them, you know, I'm working out during my pregnancy. I don't want to have to hide this from you guys. I don't tell you. You know, I'm going to work out. And they're like, oh, that's fine. Do whatever you're doing. We have women that run marathons in their pregnancy. That's cool. But they were like, okay, you know, you're great. You're good to go. Go ahead and do whatever. Just, you know, take it slow and see how you feel. So basically I started working out again. I did a couple kind of short workouts just to see how I was feeling. And then, you know, I'm on the community all that time, and everybody's been so great and supportive in there. And everyone else was doing VI workouts. So I was like, well, I'm not going to continue doing these other shorter workouts. I'm going to go back to doing the Venus workouts. And I had bought phase two. I bought phase two while I was pregnant. And right towards the end of my pregnancy, Naomi had to kind of hold me back a little bit, because I was like, oh, I really want to start this. And she's like, you know what? Now it's not really the best time for that.
Yeah, no.
You might want to just wait until after. And I was like, oh, I know. I know. So I did wait, but that's what I started out with. So once I was clear to work out again, and I'd done a couple workouts to kind of see how I felt, and I was feeling pretty good. You know, I started out phase two with some lighter weights, and just started kind of going through it, and started out with a couple sets to begin with, just to get kind of get back to feeling stronger, and then just kept kind of building up, you know, as I continued to go through it. But I love phase two. I liked phase one, but I think, you know, I like the rep range a little bit better and the real variety in phase two. It sort of appealed to me more with what I had been doing and what I like to do. So I'm actually going through it for the second time now. Mm. I finished it about like halfway through the contest and then started it again.
Oh, but you like it that much? Okay.
Yeah, I love it.
Good. Well, I'm glad. Okay, so then that's what you did there. And then did you add any cardio to it, or what did you do as far as was it just the work base workouts?
Well, when I first started back to working out, and this was prior to the contest too, so I started working out sometime like around right before Thanksgiving, I think, right before American Thanksgiving, and I started phase two then, and I was doing. I used to do a lot of interval training. Even when I was pregnant, I did some interval training, but I didn't do as much. Once I started to kind of set a certain deficit goal, I kind of took to heart a lot of the advice that you're giving about, you know, you have a certain number of hours of the week that you can really dedicate to doing intense workouts, and that those should be mostly your resistance training and not to throw in a lot of like interval cardio that's going to make you really hungry and all that. So the most I did was a lot of walking. So I kind of set some goals for myself. One was working out three times a week. So I wanted to work out three times a week, and sometimes it was two and sometimes it was four. You know, it just depended. The other was getting 7 hours of sleep a night. So that's easier said than done when you have a 3-month-old baby that's nursing, waking up in the middle of the night and all that. But I set that as a goal. And then the walking goal that I had was like 6,000 steps a day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I don't have a job where I walk around a lot.
Oh, I know. I've got a pedometer on my iPod that That's actually hard to do if you're not paying attention.
Oh, I know. And if you're working at home, which I do 3 days a week, I mean, if I don't go outside of the house, it's pretty much impossible to hit 6,000 steps a day. There's just no way. I might hit like 2,000 or 3,000, but mm-hmm. that's it. So that was pretty much what I did as far as cardio. Just walked with the baby in the stroller. That's pretty much it.
Okay, so then moving on, what did you do for, everyone's going to want to know what you did for diet?
Well, so I was in a little different situation, given that I'm nursing a baby, and I've never really done a lot of really heavy-duty calorie restriction. For me, sort of a medium-type deficit has usually worked pretty well when I've lost weight. So I didn't do any fasting. I know that works really well for some people, but I just didn't. I kept thinking, I'm going to do it sometime, and I just never did. Mm-hmm. But my goal was to create kind of a small deficit every day, hopefully, 500 calories between activity and eating approximately. I have an armband, like a Body Media Fit armband, and given there's air there as far as expenditure, and then there's obviously air as far as how much you're eating, I kind of just figured, well, I'm nursing, so that's going to take care maybe of my air term. And then I tried to create like a 500 to 600 calorie deficit on, on those days, given, sort of ignoring the nursing thing and saying, well, I'm going to use the transformation diet, the reverse taper diet.
Okay.
And I tried to use those numbers and, just do it that way. And it worked out to about maybe about a pound a week throughout the contest.
And okay, and so those numbers estimated you pretty closely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there were some weeks when it was a little bit more, and some weeks when it was a little bit less. We went on vacation about halfway through, and that sort of things are a little funky around then. But yeah, that worked out pretty well. So I think I sent you my numbers of mm-hmm. what my estimates were. I did manage to get a little bit more of a deficit sort of at the very beginning of the contest. But interestingly, lost about the same amount of weight each month of the contest. So, it was pretty consistent all the way through. But
so, it worked as planned, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yep. And I liked the idea of kind of getting myself all the way to my numbers during the contest, but I kind of didn't think that was going to be happening. So I didn't really kind of tell myself at the beginning, I'm going to get to my numbers at the end of the contest. I kind of said, I want to get to my numbers by the time pool season starts.
Mm.
And so I had this plan that I would lose about a pound a week, and that would get me pretty close. And it did get me pretty close. I think my shoulders and my hips are there pretty much, and my waist is about an inch away. But I still have a little bit of time left, as I thought it would, to get fully there. But it worked much better, even better than I imagined. I sort of put the four pictures away, not really looked at them, and then when I started taking my practice after pictures and I compared them, I was like, wow, there's a lot bigger change here than I thought there was.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's a consistent thing. I'm sure you've heard that in the podcast. It's just day to day, you're just not going to see it. You gotta pull those pictures out like far. I can't remember who I was talking to, but somebody was saying they don't even want to look at their pictures anything shorter than a month apart. So just because it seems too soon, and that a 2 week update is almost not enough. And so a few people I've talked to want, like, they're like, a month is far enough apart to actually see something. So 6 weeks, anything past that, you can get an idea. But if you the daily look in the mirror, it's just, well, that's what I look like yesterday. You never, yesterday's only, it's just so, it's only ever, I don't think it's ever even 24 hours. I mean, you look in the mirror in the morning and in the evening, likely for everybody in these, so like it's literally maybe 10, 12 hours since the last time you saw yourself. That's way too short of a time frame to recognize what's going on.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I only did my measurements about like every couple weeks or so, and it's a little discouraging. I had gone from when I first started tracking after my son was born, about maybe like a month after he was born, I finally weighed myself and I took my measurements, and that was sort of like my mental starting point. I said, all right, it's been a month, I've been kind of watching what I've been eating. I've been tracking, but I haven't been able to exercise now. This is sort of like, now I'm going to get started and get serious. I'm going to figure out what my weight is. I'm going to figure out my measurements and all that. And so I've seen a lot of big changes already in that time from, like, October until January. But then, you know, I was starting to get towards the end of my changes, and so things were slower. They felt a lot slower during the contest than what had happened already so far. So, you know,
Was that tough, getting used to the idea that the changes are that slow at that point?
Yeah, it is a little tougher because, I mean, it's great. You see so much happen when, you know, especially after you have a baby because, you know, your skin's all stretched out. You're really, you know, there's water retention and all this stuff. So you see a lot of inches kind of dropping off very quickly at the beginning. And, you know, I had felt pretty good by December. I was like, wow, you know, I had lost about 10 pounds by December. And then, like, December 1st, I think, the uncontest. So Alicia started the uncontest. And then I saw actually about 8 pounds before the beginning of the contest drop off. And so that was still big changes happening, kind of felt really great. And then, you know, 13 pounds over 12 weeks seemed a little slower, but I guess that's just the way it is. And I kept telling myself it's just because I'm getting closer and, you know, having the reverse taper diet and all that helped me, you know.
Yeah, we're actually rejigging the next round of contests because of that reason. I mean, this will probably be the first time this interview will be the first time people hear about it. Essentially, we have to accommodate that kind of slowdown at the end. So we're going to add in different categories. We're probably going to add in a longer category because it seems like even with yourself, a lot of people had a bigger change over a bit more time. And it seems like people are only recording the last 12 weeks because that's just what we have for a contest. So we're going to add in a longer one to capture the whole thing.
Oh, that's a great idea. I think a lot of people are going to like that a lot because it sort of gives you a little bit longer of a planning timeline. I think, you know, sometimes maybe you're capturing the last 12 weeks or maybe you're capturing the first 12 weeks, but it is such a cool story to get to see that longer picture. And I think this is the part where I plug the community a lot too. And just saying there are people there that are in the midst of or towards the end of a longer change and being able to see and have them kind of periodically post on, hey, look back at what I did before and where I've come from is really, really helpful. So I can see having that longer category is going to be an awesome thing to have.
Yeah, well, it's just turning out that way. We've got so many people we talk to, even yourself included, right? It's like, well, this is what happened over the 12 weeks, but I actually lost even more just before. I'm like, oh, man, and we're not capturing that. So we just have to retool. Plus, with the reverse taper diet, once we've solved kind of that once we came out with that and once we kind of figured out how it actually works, we're realizing, hey, it's a little bit tricky to be like, well, it's just going to slow down at the end. And if we only give people a 12-week venue, but then they're also recognizing that it has to slow down at the end, they're like, well, wait a minute, 12 weeks might not be enough. If you follow reverse taper. So you kind of – I get how we kind of are sending a bit of a mixed message. It's like, well, use this, but it's slow, but we're only giving you 12 weeks to compete. So if you want to use it, and then – you know what I mean? So now if we give like a longer time frame and apply reverse taper, then it all starts to make way more sense.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. I think that'll be really, really popular. And it does help people more to think, well, it's going to take me a while, but now I've got sort of a time frame and a group of people. I think that also is really helpful. You know, that contests are helpful in having a group of people that are all moving towards the same goal and can support each other. And so if they're doing that over a longer period of time, it just gives you more of a kind of a window of concerted effort and planning. Just, that's nice. Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. All right. So then, was the patience the biggest challenge, or was there something else that was a real challenge on the way?
Oh, you mean besides having a newborn?
Oh, well, okay. Is that, all right, you tell me, what is that?
It was a bit of a challenge, you know, trying to figure out the new plan for me for working out with a baby. And it was harder when he was littler, because even though my husband is awesome and has been wonderful in supporting me through this whole process, so I've known him since high school. We met in high school, and so he's known me through kind of thick and thin and weight up and down over the years and has always been supportive of me when I say, you know, I want to get in shape, and I need to have the time to do it. So he's been great about, you know, taking the baby when it's time for me to work out and just making sure I get the time that I need. But that being said, you know, babies don't really understand mommy needs an hour and, you know, I need to work out. So I had plenty of times when I started a workout and then, you know, baby's hungry, crying, needs to be fed. And so I kind of had to stop and say, okay, I'm going to feed him and then I'm going to go back to my workout and get it done and just kind of have to realize, you know, you can't set a schedule like you used to. I used to get up really early in the morning to work out, and that wasn't really doable anymore. So kind of had to readjust my expectations as far as, you know, scheduling certain days of the week didn't really work anymore. Mm-hmm. And not only do I have a baby, but I have a 7-year-old daughter, too. So we're working around, you know, school schedules now in the morning and, you know, activities in the afternoon. And I work a full-time job, and I work, you know, from home part of the time, and I go into work part of the time. So I'm kind of working around all these different variables as far as my workouts. So that was probably the biggest challenge, you know, just trying to figure out when am I going to actually get this done. But, you know, I also kept in mind that the eating part was more important for the fat loss. And that helped out a lot because I could let myself kind of let go a little bit if I had to only have 2 workouts that week. If I knew everything was going okay with the deficit and I was kind of keeping track of what I was eating and, you know, even if I had a bad day, just this concept of forward and backward and neutral days really helped me out a lot. Mm-hmm. So I at least knew, okay, yeah, today was not good. I had too much to eat or, you know, I had a planned day when I knew I was going to eat a lot, but, you know, I can look at my planner and say, well, the rest of the week was forward, so everything was good. And, you know, I got in my couple workouts and I got in a few walks. And so I did, you know, borrow that idea of using stickers in the planner that so many people have talked about in their podcasts, and that really helped me out a lot to just kind of look at the week and say, you know, here's what I did accomplish. Even though despite all these challenges, I was able to get this stuff done.
Yeah, so I think simplicity on the tracking is the most important thing. Like trying to track too many things too specifically just gets a little ridiculous. So, and it really, it's meaningless to try to calculate every single calorie or calculate every minute trained. It's like, did I train or not? That's one sticker. Did I more or less hit my calorie, you know, rough goals? That's another, you know what I mean? Like, did I get a bit extra cardio? That's a sticker. And that's it. And it doesn't even matter how specific. As long as you can sticker your way up, you're good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that was really helpful for me to kind of use broad, you know, forward, backward kind of thinking about nutrition instead of, you know, in previous times when I lost weight, you know, before my kids or, you know, after Hannah, I was doing a lot more of trying to, you know, track specific macros and hit certain percentages and, you know, and try not to eat, like, bad foods. And I'd feel guilty if I had things I shouldn't have had. And I think I've gotten a lot better now at internalizing this sort of anything goes kind of style of eating and been a lot better at just saying, okay, it's calories. So, you know, let's just sort of stick to the broad number of calories. Am I doing okay or not? Was the day, you know, positive or not? And that's helped me out just mentally so much because it sort of removes the stigma from certain foods and I can have them sometimes. And in fact, I've had, you know, mochas every single day, I think, since Hunter was born, you know, at least 2 or 3 every day. And I make them at home, so I sort of know, like, ballpark what the calories are. But I haven't really deprived myself of anything specific. I've had to kind of cut down on certain foods that are really calorie dense. I'm not having cheesecake every day, much as I'd like to, but, you know, you got to sort of draw the line somewhere.
So you did follow an anything goes sort of approach and didn't cut anything off specifically?
No, not really. I mean, there's certain foods that I've noticed that when I eat, I don't really feel that good after I eat them. So I kind of just, and some of them are just sort of like nutritionally devoid and I don't really enjoy eating them. So I kind of made that idea of like, what foods can I just get by without eating that are really calorie dense that I don't really care to eat? You know, things like mashed potatoes. You know, I've always kind of said blah. You know, corn, you know, pasta, not my favorite. So things like
those are the things that ended up on the can do without list.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there were certain things like when I was pregnant, I ate a ton of scones from Starbucks. I mean,
they're wonderful.
I had two horrible periods in my pregnancy. One was during first trimester where I had a 2-week period where I ate a burrito every single day.
Come on.
No, seriously. And I'm not at home. I mean, like Moe's or like Salsa Fresh. And I went to like different places so they wouldn't be like, good God, this pregnant woman's in here every single day.
You were actually conscious of that? You didn't want to be known as like the pregnant woman that comes in to just wipe us clean of burritos?
Well, this was first trimester, so it wasn't even that obvious that I was pregnant. So how bad is that? You know, if you go to the same burrito place every single day for 2 weeks. But I had
it's like you don't even have the social excuse of pregnancy if it's first trimester. You just seem like a burrito fiend.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really weird. So I had that 2-week period, and my husband kept finding like receipts for burritos in my purse, and he's like,
so were you being a secret eater? Did he? So he caught
no,
you?
No, it wasn't. He knew about it. He just thought it was funny. But you know, we found. You know, I kept giving him because it was debit cards, and he takes care of them. The receipts and everything. And I kept giving him. He's like, seriously, more burrito? So that was a weird 2-week period. And then I haven't had one since.
Yeah, you know, I do that too. I go through phases. You know, I think everybody does, and we're just talking about it. Everybody does this. I went through this really odd phase for about 20 days in a row. I had to stop at McDonald's for an ice cream cone.
Huh.
They're just little soft serve.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten ice cream in like 20 years. Like soft serve like that, like I just don't eat ice cream. And then I don't know why, I just went on this, you know what it was? The bank, I went to the bank, I don't know, just to take some money out, and they were giving away coupons for a free ice cream cone to McDonald's. And I grabbed like a stack of them because I just thought, this is cool. And then I just started eating ice cream cones out of nowhere. Like I haven't eaten them in, I don't think I have any recollection of ever going to McDonald's for an ice cream cone. And all of a sudden it was like my regular thing. And then I just stopped, you know, like about, you know, 2-3 weeks later. Well, I only had 3 coupons. I bought probably 20 ice cream cones, you know, and I'm like, what was that? And I was just sort of, it was like it was another person. I'm like, oh, that was my ice cream cone phase. It's just weird. Everybody does this, and I bet you people have, like, you did burritos, I did ice cream. Everyone has something weird that they go through. I think we're really phasic like that with, when I say we, I mean, I don't just mean you and me, I mean people in general, especially in these societies where like every food on earth is available. We go through these phases where we, I don't know where, just start eating something and then kind of run its course. Be like, okay, I'm done with that. And then but you're always back down to your core foods that you sort of always eat. And then every now and then there's these weird streaks of some odd thing we put in for some reason. Now I know, when women are pregnant, they do really strange ones. But so I'm trying to contribute the best I can. My ice cream cone was the weird one I did.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. Well, so we started on this tangent for my scones. So my scones were my thing, you know, later in my pregnancy. I had all these, you know, later in my pregnancy, I would just go to Starbucks like almost every single day. Mm-hmm. And I started out getting those little like vanilla bean scones. They're tiny. Mm-hmm. So that was my sort of end of pregnancy thing. The burrito thing was first trimester weirdness, but, you know, the end of pregnancy thing was getting expensive. You know, those things aren't cheap. Mm-hmm. So I started making scones at home. So I just looked online for like a copycat recipe for the maple oatnut scones, which are my favorite ones that they have at Starbucks. And I started making one. And so every day, pretty much every day since Hunter was born, you know, I've had at least one of those. So that's kind of like my standard breakfast is like a mocha that I make at home and a scone. And, you know, I use some wheat flour and I have pecans. And I mean, they're not super unhealthy. They're a lot healthier than the Starbucks ones when you look up the nutritional info. But, you know, if you kind of plan your cut-down diet around foods, I know you know this, but around foods that you like, you know, it can be enjoyable. You don't feel deprived and not just eating like egg whites and spinach or something, which... No, tasty, but, you know, it's old.
Gets old, yeah. It doesn't have to be miserable. I don't know why people, like, I mean, I hang around with some people who do fitness shows and stuff, and I think, I know I've talked a million times about this, but some of them just attach themselves to the, like, the suffering. For some reason, they want to suffer. I think in their mind, it makes it more real or makes it seem like... No, they deserve more attention for it, or I think they resent the idea. They would resent the idea that somebody else did it with less suffering attached to it. You know what I mean? So like if 10 different people all got in shape, but some of them believe it was more important or more valuable because they suffered more to get there and don't want to believe that someone got there without suffering. You know what I mean? You know where I'm going with that? And it's like,
yeah,
I don't think it's necessary at all, but I catch that feeling from some people and I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I think you're just, I don't know. I think you're making this worse than it needs to be, and it just doesn't need to be that bad. And I still haven't figured out, I haven't thought enough about it or read enough about it to figure out why people want to suffer, but some people really do, and I just haven't figured it out. I think it's just another way of cutting yourself. I mean, it's self-mortification, but through workout, you know. I guess at the very least, you're kind of getting in shape for it, but it doesn't seem all that emotionally or mentally healthy, but, you know, whatever.
No, it doesn't, because, you know, when you're on that sort of really restrictive plan, then the second you kind of crack and have that scone or have that Starbucks drink or something like that, and then you're just consumed with guilt and, you know.
Oh, it's all over. Oh, there's good.
It's all over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all over. There's research. There's tons of research on restrained eating. That's not calorie restriction, but restrained eating. So having like strict good and bad food lists. There's lots of research to show the more restrained you are, the worse it gets when you crack. So that's the exact wrong path to go down. I don't know if we've talked about that much, but there's actual good scientific validation for why anything must go for it to sustain.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have everything available. You don't have to eat everything, but you have to believe in your mind that it's all okay. Otherwise that restrained idea will eventually cause you to crack. So, and a lot of the competitors I hang around with, not for no other reason than they're just at my gym, so I chat with them. The same thing. They just balloon up after every show.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's all or nothing. It's on or off, and it's like go hard, and then they're off. And it's just, I mean, they can't live that life forever.
No, because it's going to end up, and it's not going to end up on. You know,
it's going to end up. Yeah, it's end up. Yeah, if your switch is on or off, it's going to be off in the off position a lot more than it's in the on position.
That's been one of the most freeing things, you know, about sort of internalizing the Venus lifestyle for me, has been freeing myself from this stuff I used to believe about, you know, I don't have time to dedicate, you know, I'm too busy now. You know, when I was single and I had all this time and I was in great shape, because I have been in really good shape in the past in my life, you know, I had 2 hours to be at the gym every day. And I had all this time to cook all these different foods and, you know, I could work out whenever I wanted to. And, you know, I don't have that kind of time anymore. I used to think that. And, you know, being part of the community and sort of internalizing these less restrictive ways of eating and more flexible thoughts about exercise have really helped me to kind of escape from that and to think, you know, I do have the time. I don't have to exercise 7 days a week, and I don't have to plan my meals and bring my food, and I don't have to do all this crazy stuff, and I can be in, I'm in better shape now than I've been since probably 2002, I think, was the last time I was in, you know, pretty good shape like this. And I don't think I'm quite where I want to be even. So the fact that I've managed to do that while dealing with full-time job and children and all this stuff just proves that if I can do this, anybody can do this. And it doesn't require being a crazy, gym-addicted, you know, healthy food nut kind of person to do it. So that's been really very freeing for me, and it gives me hope for the rest of my life that I won't have to go through these big swings and weight. And childbearing years, it's a normal time for you to have big weight swings, but I've had some that were not directly related to pregnancy either, that were more job stress and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you've got the tools now to deal with this, even no matter how busy or sort of messed up your schedule is?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, this job that I have, I do travel, and I did travel, you know, prior to my son. Actually, I think before last March, I traveled quite a lot. And, you know, I used to kind of eat out all the time, and I would just eat whatever. But then once I started working out again and kind of being more careful with what I was eating, I could see that I could actually lose weight and, you know, maintain it while traveling and, you know, eating out all the time and, you know, working out in hotel gyms. It was possible to do because it didn't require the kind of effort that I thought it required. It just required, you know, tightening down the nutrition a bit and ordering things a little bit differently and just not constantly stuffing my face with whatever I wanted to all the time.
So, yeah, I like to think that we just rechannel people's effort into, like, what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the like broadening your view of goal setting. So just the sticker, did you move forward or not? That takes away some mental anguish from, like, being too restrictive, right? Get just calories in and out versus macronutrients. It's effort, but it's more smartly directed effort. Like, channel your high-intensity energy into your weights. Like, that's, you know, tack on cardio wherever you can, but don't like, kill yourself with intervals. Like, you know, it's almost like you put this maybe the same amount of effort in, but with way more results, or even less effort, more payoff. It's kind of, I mean, I guess the underlying theme is it does take effort, but it's nowhere near as bad as you think if you put the effort in the right spots.
Definitely. And the other thing is, the effort is worth it when you get to the end and you have the outcome that you want. Putting in all that effort, you're actually getting to where you want to be. And it's worth it. So it's worth it to me right now. If I have to track what I eat on an app, you know, most days for the rest of my life, that's okay because it only takes me 5 seconds to do it. You know, if I have to work out 3 times a week for the rest of my life, well, you know, that's fine with me because I love working out. And I can make the time and I can work it around my schedule. And if I can only do a half an hour workout instead of an hour workout, I'll survive. You know, but
well, and that, and like you just said, it's a lifestyle. If you...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you remember me saying the whole how you train and how you eat and how you live makes you look like how you look right now. And so before you adopted this kind of lifestyle, you looked one way, and then you adopt it, you look this way. And then, you know, you can't go back because then you just go back to looking how you used to look. So it's, you just got to pick which life do you want to live.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like right now I'm on a path to living the way that I want to live. And I've been there before, but I just thought it would take too much effort to get back to that. And so I've been trying to be forgiving of my past self, but while also realizing it doesn't take as much effort as I thought it did. I like the effort that it does take, and it's worth it to me when I can go into the store and buy clothes that fit me, that I like how they look, and I feel good about myself. And it's just, you know, it's worth the effort that I do put in. So I don't really talk about it much anymore. I don't really talk about, you know, the work that I do put into it, just because it seems like a lot of people don't really understand. You know, I feel like in the community people do, but I don't feel like I have to talk about it to anybody at work. I don't feel like I have to talk about it a lot to my family.
You shouldn't. Yeah. One of my life operating missions is you should never have to explain yourself to anyone. If you're in a position where you have to explain yourself to somebody, you're in the wrong environment or talking to the wrong person.
Yeah, I feel like people do have questions, and they'll say, well, you know, how'd you lose all that weight? Was it, you know, because they've not seen me do this twice. You know, once before I got pregnant and now after I got pregnant. You know, how are you eating? Is it paleo or are you eating low carb? I had a conversation with someone at work the other day, and I was like, no, just eating less. And then, you know, she launched into a long discussion of, you know, why she couldn't do that. And I just kind of listened. But, you know, I felt bad for even saying anything, and that just sort of reinforced in my mind, you know, I don't really want to talk about this too much unless someone's really, really ready to listen.
Yeah, I mean, and I've said that too, right? If you have a willing student, yeah, help them, but they are rare.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are all willing students because you took it and ran with it and got somewhere. But for every one of you that did that, there's a bunch of people who just aren't ready or just don't want to, or will come up with an excuse. So, unfortunately, we'll always run into more excuse makers than people who, like, actually get something done. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, people are willing to help. People, like, will help. I'm sure you would help somebody who you're like, oh, that person might actually do something with it. Because, you know, kind of like Naomi, she's, you know, she recognizes people might have some. She helps out the people who get somewhere.
Yep.
So you end up with your team of people. But, you know, they have to come to you and they have to be willing. You can never. I think it's funny. I've just finished another interview on the guy's side, and same thing. He doesn't really say much to people because it's not going to get them anywhere if they're not serious.
Yeah.
Right. They're just,
if they're not ready to listen and ready to make that change, then you can't make them ready. Nobody can, and nobody could make me ready. You know, when somebody says something to me now about like, oh, you really should stop, you know, you're thin enough, or, you know, I just think you're skinny enough, or whatever. I'm getting that a little bit now from a couple people. But I, you know, I just want to say, like, where were you when I was 185 pounds and I put on like 50 pounds in 3 years at a job? I mean, where were you then saying, like, you need to do something that just, mm-hmm. you know.
It's so awkward. There's a social, there's a social taboo that stops people from mentioning, hey, you might actually need to lose weight, but then it's completely socially acceptable to tell someone to stop losing weight. And it's just so, it's funny. I don't know where that comes from. And it's just, it's, I don't know, I guess we're afraid of hurting someone's feelings, but then on this end, it can, when you are getting in shape and you're almost there, then it, like, you got to be careful with your psychic space there, because they can wear away at your motivation, right? Like, motivation's fragile as it is. The last thing you need is people like kicking at it or trying to punch a hole in it while you're, you know, in the final stages of turning it into a sustainable lifestyle, and then having people shoot some arrows at you that way. It's like when you need the kick in the ass, you don't get it. And then when you don't need anyone's opinion, you get it. And it's like, this is completely set up backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. It can feel that way. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right. So I guess we're getting on to the end here. What's your sort of, fire out anything that you wanted to say that we didn't cover, and then give us your conclusions and or advice to other women looking to make a change, and maybe speak specifically to your experience, you know, coming off of a pregnancy, and whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I got a couple of things. One is, I posted something in the forum just saying, is there anything anyone's interested in hearing more about? And one of the things I talked a little bit about that people asked me about was just the stress of motherhood and how balancing the stress of sort of being a mom with the demands of the contest. And mm-hmm. I think for me, it was demanding being in the contest. I mean, it was challenging kind of trying to keep up my deficit, but I didn't really go overboard, I don't think, in any way while doing the contest. So I didn't try to do things kind of that were out of what I felt my reach would be given the constraints on my time. So that's another reason, like I was saying, I like the longer time frame idea, because maybe for a really busy mom, it's not conceivable to get somewhere specifically in 12 weeks and get to where she wants to be in 12 weeks, and she needs a little bit more time to get there. But I just kind of had to make a trade-off between where I thought I could get and the time frame that I had and the time constraints that I had, you know, with my job and my kids and all that stuff. So some of it is just sort of reconciling that, you know, I'm not a single person anymore. I'm not a married woman with no kids. I don't have all the time in the world, and I just kind of have to take the time where I can get it and use the workouts as kind of my me time and get some mental energy off of just having that time and dedicating that time to myself, because as moms, we're so, so good at doing everything for everyone else and so, so terrible at doing things specifically for ourselves. I had to be a little bit selfish and say, you know, I'm going to do this and it's for me, but it's also for everyone else, because when I'm happy and, you know, I've had a chance to do the things that I need to do, then I'm a better mom and I'm a better wife and I'm better at my job and I'm better at all these things. So I think that's really important to remember when you're feeling like it's just too overwhelming to think about embarking on a change when you've got all these other constraints. Just remember that, you know, you're doing it also for yourself, because you'll feel so much better when you do those things yourself, for yourself. When you're so used to be doing all this stuff for everyone else. The other thing for me, I'm very, very fortunate that I have a husband that's been extremely supportive of all my efforts, you know, in the fitness realm and work and everything else. So he also works out and plays on a soccer team, so we kind of trade off time. So, you know, it's always a negotiation in marriage, but with us too, it's the fitness. Like, I need to work out this morning, you know, you have soccer later on, or, you know, you can work out tomorrow morning, or I'll work out first and you work out after. You know, we kind of take it so that, you know, we have the kids and we can each fit in our workouts when we need to. So that really helped out a lot. Another thing someone asked me was about, you know, they said, oh, you have really great abs for having just had a baby. I'm like, well, 7 months ago, yeah, just had a baby, but no, thank you. it feels like it wasn't that long ago, but you know, 7 months is getting to be quite a while now. So I think a big thing with that was just fat loss in general. So, you know, losing fat obviously is going to uncover whatever you've got under there. I still have never really seen my abs, but at least my ab area is looking nicer. I still have a lot of loose skin from the pregnancy, and I'm hoping over time that'll kind of firm back up since it wasn't, you know, stretched out for too long. And I also stopped training my abs during the contest. One of your podcasts, I think it was maybe Roberta's, she was saying, just talking about how she, you know, she was having trouble getting to the VI waist measurement, and you recommended just to stop training, that, you know, you get plenty of stimulation from just regular heavy lifting, and it might not be necessary to specifically do targeted ab exercises. So I kind of took that to heart and just stopped doing my planks and stopped doing my rollouts. And I also did modify and not do any of the direct, after maybe, I guess maybe halfway through the contest, I stopped doing, like, the curls and tricep extensions, and I just subbed in, like, more rows, like DRX rows and push-ups instead, mm-hmm. just because I felt like, you know, that if there's still a lot of fat there, you know, I'm not necessarily going to see all of the arm muscles that I could anyway, and I'm still getting plenty of stimulation from those, too. So I kind of did make a couple modifications.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, the 21 rep sets too. I just can't love those. Can't grow to love those.
No,
they're another 13 rep set.
They're more of the, it's there because it's good for you, not because it's fun.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's
you
just
know,
it's just how those work.
I know. Once in a while, I would do some of them, but I did. You know, that was for abs. That was just one thing I did was I stopped doing the direct ab exercises.
Mm.
The only other thing I was going to mention was, and maybe this is not so relevant for people on the forum because it's sort of like past history stuff, but maybe more relevant for them, you know, if they have daughters, for example. I started lifting when I was in middle school. So like a lot of girls, you know, in my early teen years, I hit puberty and just started, you know, gaining weight because everything was all crazy and weird and my body was changing. And I was pretty discouraged by about 7th grade. It's sad. You know, you think 7th grade is so young. But by then,
totally.
I just totally hated my body. It's sad. It is sad. But I actually started lifting weights during a summer class at a local high school when I was in, I think it was in between 7th and 8th grade.
Wow, so, that's really young.
Yeah, but I loved it. It was great. And, you know, I was the kind of kid that I grew early. So, you know, in grade school, I was 5'4". And then everybody else kept growing and I stopped.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I don't think I did any damage to myself by lifting weights real early, but you know, I know it's not necessarily recommended. But I liked it. And so that summer I did a lot of stuff with Nautilus and Universal Machines because we weren't really allowed in the free weight area. But I liked it and I was strong. So I kept doing that. And we convinced the YMCA to let me join because they usually wouldn't let kids as young as that use the equipment there. So I was able to join and start using Universal Machine there. And then when they finally figured I wasn't an idiot and I wasn't going to, you know, hurt anybody, then they let me into the Nautilus area. And so I did that and Stairmaster and Elliptical and did some classes and stuff like that. You know, I had lost quite a bit of weight by 8th grade and I joined the track team. I was on the basketball team. So I did sports, but in the off seasons I would go and I would lift weights. And then I worked with a coach at the Y, like 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, because I was doing throwing events for track. And his name was Dwayne Wilson, and he was really great. And he actually introduced me to lifting free weights and Olympic weights. So he worked with me on a lot of, like, the major lifts, you know, bench press, incline bench press, and squats, barbell rows. I never did pull-ups, but I did a lot of, like, pull-downs and, you know, all sorts of dumbbell exercises, leg press, and leg extension, mm-hmm. all that stuff. And so I did have exposure kind of pretty young to doing some of these lifts that now are, some of them are part of the Venus programs. And it really helped me out a lot when I, over my life, as I've kind of made efforts to get into shape, to kind of go back to the time and say, okay, well, what did I do then? And obviously my goals are not the same now as they were then. I mean, back then it was sports performance for me. So, but I was pretty strong. I could bench press my body weight in 11th grade. So I know I weighed like around 140 pounds then because I could bench press
that much. That's really strong. So I guess what's the message there is it's okay to teach girls at a young age to lift because it's a skill they'll have forever.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, I would definitely say if anybody has, you know, teenage girls that are interested in doing Venus or doing some sort of weightlifting program, that it's a really positive thing to learn. Because they can always return to that. I mean, you can't necessarily always say you're a tennis player or a gymnast or whatever. You can't always return to those things throughout your life if, say, you had injuries or something. But I think the weightlifting is a good complement to other sports you might want to do. You know, helping to keep you injury-free if you decide, you know, you want to run or you want to do bike races or whatever.
So, yeah, and I guess in long-term, it'll keep your muscles strong, bones strong. You know, help keep you – it's just going – it's just something that I think it should be omnipresent in every person's life, so I'm biased. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and I've had a, you know, I've tried to get my mom interested in lifting weights, and over the years she's had times when she's done it, and, you know, she's more of a social person, like it's harder for her to do it kind of on her own, so she likes mm-hmm. to go to a class. I think you just kind of have to do whatever works for you. If it works mm-hmm. for you to have a partner, then you go with a partner. If it works for you to just go and exercise by yourself, which is me, and that's what I do. But it's a great skill, like a lifetime skill to have that you can always do, and it doesn't require you having to compete at anything.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, I 100% agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it off then.
Definitely. Yep.
All right. So, well, thanks for being on the call. Congrats on the win. And for Shannon Connors, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index Podcast.